Kenosha has been the latest center point for issues of policing and racial justice after a police officer shot Jacob Blake. The city has seen peaceful demonstrations as well as looting and the presence of armed counter-protesters, one of whom is a white teenager accused of killing two people at the demonstrations. This tension, these cycles of protest and violence, they aren't new. And while this year's events have drawn comparisons to the unrest of the 1960s, our next guest says there's a deeper history going back to the 1940s and the 1920s that tells us about our current moment. Thomas Sugru is a professor of social and cultural analysis and history at New York University, where he directs the NYU Collaborative on Global Urbanism. Thomas, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Before we really get into those comparisons, overall, what do we lose if we aren't thinking about history when we talk about the events of the past several months, the past several days?
Well, there's a tendency to look at current events as singular, as something that just happened now that's the result of current circumstances. But to understand the uprisings that have broken out in the U.S. and worldwide since May around Black Lives Matter and most recently in Kenosha, we have to put it in the context of a couple centuries long struggle by African Americans against police repression, going back to slave patrols and intensifying in the 20th century as Northern whites reacted violently and Northern police reacted violently to African Americans who were migrating to cities. So the history is a deep and long one.
You write that one time we should look at starts in the so-called Red Summer of 1919. And a few years after that, it was a strikingly violent time. What did we see across the country then?
Well, the country was in real turmoil in the late teens and early 1920s. It was a period of intense racial and gender tensions, of anti-immigration sentiment. The Spanish flu epidemic ravaged the United States in that period. But most of all, clashes between whites and African Americans played out because it was the beginning of the so-called Great Migration, or the mass movement of African Americans into cities around the country, in the South and West, but especially in the North. And so we saw clashes between whites, mostly fiercely opposing African Americans moving into jobs that they consider to be white jobs in the defense industry, or moving into neighborhoods that were perceived as white turf and white neighborhoods. So Chicago in 1919 is a good example of that, where mobs of whites attacked African Americans on the streets, resisting their migration to the city and trying to assert their power over African American bodies.
And 100 years ago, where were the police when this was happening?
The police often took the side of the violent whites who were attacking African Americans, or turned a blind eye toward what whites were doing. In some cases, white vigilantes worked with the cooperation of the police. One of the most violent uprisings in that period was 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where white vigilantes attacked the African-American business district, Greenwood, or known as the Black Wall Street, killing about 300 people and displacing almost the entire Black population of Tulsa and burning down almost all the African-American-owned businesses there. And police arrested African-Americans who defended themselves, which was a pretty common police tactic in that period. Let the whites run rampant, but arrest African-Americans whenever they tried to defend themselves against white violence.
Did that change the strategy then of Black groups and organizing coming out of that, if that was what they were up against?
Well, during the period from the 1920s up through the 1940s, there was growing mobilization by African-Americans to demand racial equality, to push for civil rights. And that meant groups like the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which had been founded in 1909, mobilizing to abolish lynching, for example, or beginning to mobilize in the 1920s and especially during the 1930s and 40s to open up jobs on an equal basis for African Americans in American industry. And increasingly in the 40s and and 50s, pushing for equal opportunity in housing, which was one of the major areas of racial inequality in that period, all growing out of responses to this long period of racial inequality in the North, especially.
Thomas Sugrue is a professor of social and cultural analysis and history at New York University. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234 as we talk about the long history when it comes to demonstrations for racial justice. What do you think the first step is to preventing further tension today? Maybe you've taken part in protests now or at any point in the past. What do you think we should know? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Thomas, you're from Detroit. The city's 1967 riots are well known, but it was also one of the cities where race riots happened in the 40s. What characterized this period of unrest?
The 1940s was another era of intense competition between whites and African Americans. It was the Second World War. Black migration to northern cities like Detroit intensified a great deal. Whites would walk out of jobs on assembly lines to protest the first African American or even the placement of a single African American in a particular job category that had been all white. They were called hate strikes. And also during that period, there were intense clashes over the movement of the first or second African-American household into a formerly all-white neighborhood. And so the 43 uprisings in Detroit were an example similar to that, what we saw in the Red Summers of 1919 and the early 20s, which is whites rising to defend, as they saw it, their neighborhoods against what they considered to be the invasion of African-Americans. And so in Detroit in 43, whites yanked African-Americans off of buses and streetcars and beat them up. They attacked African-Americans in the streets. They marauded in African-American business districts, all as ways of trying to assert their power over the city's growing Black population and to try to push them back into a position of inequality. And here, too, the police were largely complicit with the whites who took to the streets, mostly arresting African-Americans and sometimes killing African-Americans as well. 34 people died in the Detroit uprising in 1943.
Yet 25 of them were Black and 17 were killed by police. How often did the actions of police spark some of the violence in the streets that we're talking about?
Police violence was one of the biggest and most significant unresolved issues over the course of the long 20th century and into the 21st. In the 1960s in Detroit and almost all of the hundreds of places that exploded in uprisings or rebellions or riots, as they were called, almost all of them were sparked by an incident between an African-American and the police. In Detroit, it was a police raid on a so-called blind pig or an illegal after-hours bar where folks had gathered to have a party for a young African-American man about to go off to Vietnam to fight in the war. In Chicago, clashes broke out on the city's west side when African-Americans played in fire hydrants on the street during a hot summer and were arrested for so doing. In Philadelphia and in Los Angeles in 1964, uprisings began after police stops of African-American motorists and the spread of rumors that the police had either attacked or killed those African-American drivers. And so nearly every major uprising in the 60s was sparked by a confrontation between the police and an African-American or group of African-Americans.
We're talking with Thomas Sugrue right now, historian and professor at NYU. We're discussing the history of protests and the violence that accompanied it in different points throughout the 20th century. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What question do you have about the history of racial justice movements and the clashes between different groups? Are there longstanding issues you see as being a common thread here? 800-642-1234. You can use that number to give us a call. Ask your question. Our conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. You are listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with Thomas Sugrue, a professor of social and cultural analysis and history at NYU. We're going over different waves of protest and violence during the 20th century and figuring out what they can teach us about today. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the history we're talking about or about the relationship between peaceful protest and police or looting and violence? Do you see issues that tie these different eras together? You can call 800-642-1234 now. And we've got Bill from Barnes who wants to join the conversation. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hello. This is a very good show, and I appreciate you having me on it. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks put on a little strike that has to send a signal to professional sports that maybe they need to start working for social justice and racial equity in the country. I'm wondering if you could comment on back in the 20s and the 30s, if maybe the car makers saw that they needed to provide housing in peaceful areas to live for the workers that they were eager to have. And if you see other, if you could describe some of the areas back then where the NAACP got white allies, perhaps not eager allies, but allies nevertheless to work towards theirs, and what you see in this century or right now.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, that's a good point, especially as you bring up different industries weighing in and being part of this. Thomas, what do we know about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. There was long and still is an alliance between civil rights organizations, especially the NAACP and organized labor. And it was really important in the 1930s and 1940s in terms of expanding opportunities for African-Americans and other non-white groups, but especially African-Americans in various industries. The auto industry was the best example of that. During the Second World War, the percentage of African-Americans working in auto industry jobs skyrocketed. It was in part because there was a great demand for labor during the war, but also because groups like the NAACP insisted and put pressure on employers and on the federal government through demands for fair employment to open up jobs in that industry, in the defense industry and the auto industry, to African-American workers. That was crucial for advancing African-American economic status. And that alliance has always been a fraught one. You know, there are definitely been moments and many sectors of the economy where labor unions worked against the interest of African-Americans and for the interests of whites. But the mainstream of the civil rights movement and the left of the civil rights movement throughout the 20th century saw economic equality and racial equality as necessarily having to go hand in hand. And so they joined each other's protests and gave each other material support.
Thanks again for that call, Bill, at 800-642-1234, talking with Thomas Sugrue. The 1950s and the 1960s, sometimes we think of them as the nonviolent civil rights movement. And nonviolence, it was hugely important at the time, but there was also a lot of violence, some aimed at protesters, some as part of major riots. How did peace and violence interact with each other during that time?
So many civil rights activists, best represented by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, advocated nonviolent forms of protest to demand racial equality. But just because their tactics were nonviolent didn't mean that they didn't face intense, often violent opposition on the part of white segregationists in the South and on the part of whites and the police in the North. We think of the famous incidents of, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, in 1963, where Commissioner Bull Connor infamously blasted fire hoses and sicked police dogs on children who were involved in nonviolent protesters. But the Reverend King went to Chicago in 1966 to protest segregated housing and walked through neighborhoods on Chicago's South Side and was shocked at the vitriol, the anger that was directed toward him and other nonviolent protesters, including white teens and adults from white working class neighborhoods and middle class neighborhoods in Chicago, throwing bricks and stones and calling King and his fellow protesters the N-word. So there was a lot of violence targeted even against nonviolent protesters in that period. And of course, there were also protests that went from deploying the tactic of nonviolence to more militant tactics of self-defense for example, Birmingham in 1963, just after King the nonviolent protesters were attacked by the city's police and firefighters, other African-Americans, impatient and angry at what they saw as a dehumanization of their people, took to the streets. It's a part of Birmingham that we forget, but there was looting and there were large crowds of angry African-Americans who gathered in the spring of 1963 in downtown Birmingham. And likewise in Chicago, in Philadelphia and Detroit, many nonviolent protesters were willing to throw aside their tactics of nonviolence and call for self-defense or militancy because they didn't see their tactics working. They saw white opposition as being intransigent, as not willing to bend or bow or listen. And so at that point, they were improvisational. They tried different tactics.
Thomas Sugrue is a professor of social and cultural analysis and history at New York University, and we're pulling the thread through more than 100 years of protests, of violence, of calls for racial justice. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thomas, you know, 9 days ago, we saw the police in Kenosha shoot Jacob Blake. That led to more protests. It led to looting. Also, the arrest of a 17-year-old for killing two people while he was apparently acting as part of a group standing against Black Lives Matter protesters. What history comes to mind for you as you see what's happening in Wisconsin right now?
Well, I'd say there are some significant commonalities as well as differences between past protests and reactions to them. Let's focus on the commonalities. What's happening in Kenosha is a continuation of a long history of protest against police violence toward African Americans. That's continuity. Discontinuity, the protesters are far more racially diverse on the streets of Kenosha and of most cities in the United States this spring and this summer. Around Black Lives Matter. The protests in the 1960s were largely led by African Americans with some white allies, to be sure, but the white allies weren't in many cases the majority of the crowd. They were usually a small minority. Most whites didn't care about African American advancement in the 1960s, despite our romance about those who did. Another commonality, the 1960s uprisings, the looting and clashes between African Americans and the police in big cities largely pitted white police against African American protesters. There weren't very many whites, civilian whites, who took to the streets like Kyle Rittenhouse and his militia supporters in Kenosha, or the militias that have been marching into Portland, Oregon. But if you go back to 1919 or 1943, there were white vigilantes who took to the streets and fought against African Americans using violent tactics. So Kyle Rittenhouse and his ilk are very much a latter day version, today's version of those white vigilantes who were critical players in the racial conflicts in America's long past.
I want to welcome Jeff in Superior to the conversation now. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, thank you. I'm curious, when did police departments in the North, like in Duluth or Minneapolis or Chicago or Detroit, start to hire Black police officers, African-American police officers, in order to deal with their racial tensions?
Jeff, thanks for the question. Thomas, any idea on that?
Absolutely. Excellent question. When the 60s long hot summers, as they were called, happened between 64 and 68, the vast majority of police departments, even in cities with big African-American populations, were overwhelmingly white. Detroit's police department in 1967 was about 5% African-American, even though the city at that point was getting close to 40% African-American. The Kerner Commission, which was the National Advisory Commission set up by Lyndon Johnson to investigate the uprisings, made many arguments about how to rectify the situation. And one was diversifying the ranks of police departments. That began in the late 1960s and intensified in the 1970s with the new policy of affirmative action, of hiring African Americans in other cities, Latinos or other racial minorities to join police departments. But those efforts were met with a lot of fierce resistance on the part of African, on the part of white police officers who didn't want African American colleagues. There's very good scholarship by historians who have gone back and looked at the acts of harassment that were commonplace against the first African Americans or first Latinos who joined mostly white police departments. Often they fought a real uphill battle, and in some police departments they still do.
How do we judge whether we've made any progress, especially when we can sit here and look to 1919 and draw such strong parallels, and look to the 40s and the 60s and draw these parallels? How do we figure out if we're doing any better?
Well, I don't want to be a complete racial pessimist on these matters. If you look at the urban uprisings of the 1960s, a lot more African Americans died at the hands of the police in those uprisings than they have today. The police are not as violent towards African Americans as they were in the past because of the successful demands of protesters who called for reform. Those successes, of course, were incomplete. There's way, way too much violence against non-whites by the police today. But we're in a different place than we were in 1965 or 1968. We still have a very long way to go before we overcome. But because of the acts of civil rights protesters, of those who challenge police practices in towns and cities all around the country, the situation is different than it was then.
Thomas, thank you for your time.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Thomas Sugrue is a professor of social and cultural analysis and history at New York University. And we talked about what the history of protests and riots going back to the 20s can tell us about this year's events for racial justice.